And may I do the attendance chair?
Please, thank you.
So co-chair Linda Ketchum is here. Co-chair Takesha Jordan is excused. I see Kathy Camp and Heather Sims, Xavier Yarn. I don't see Xavier yet. Alder Davy Mayer is here. Alder Julia Matthews. You're here. Thank you. And then Supervisor Doolin is here. Supervisor Rylander here. And Supervisor Baruchak. I don't see yet. And then Lieutenant Kimberly Allen is here. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Our first order of business is the approval of the minutes from our October 20th, 2025 meeting. Is there a motion to approve the October 20th minutes? Alder Matthews, thank you. Is there a second? Kathy Camp. Any objections to recording unanimous approval of the minutes? Or are there any, I should ask, are there any abstentions? Seeing none, any objection to recording unanimous approval of the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. We have no public comment this evening. So, are there any disclosures and recusals? Seeing none. We can move to our presentations. Agenda item number two, COC Notice of Funding Opportunities for Fiscal Year 2025. And Tori, I believe that is you. So, and welcome.
Hi everyone. All right. I've got slides for you. So, let me make sure I got that right. All right. I'm Tori Kottmueller. I'm the Continuum of Care Coordinator. I'm employed by the City of Madison, and work for the Homeless Services Consortium. And in my role, I help facilitate the funding competition for the Continuum of Care funds, which come from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. Funding opportunity in the evening of November 13th, 2025, with a due date of January 14th, 2026. So, a very tight timeline, and there are some significant changes that will have devastating impacts to communities across the country. So I'm going to talk through what HUD has laid out for us. Before I start, I want to note that there's pending litigation regarding this funding opportunity. The state of Wisconsin has joined 19 other states, along with Washington, D.C., in a lawsuit against HUD, challenging the new conditions outlined in this notice of funding opportunity and the cuts to permanent housing. For the Homeless Services Consortium, we are going to move forward with our response to this notice of funding opportunity, but recognize the outcome of that litigation will have impact. So it's possible that this could get paused or stopped at some point. But we need to move forward given this tight timeline in case that doesn't happen. Also of note is another lawsuit was filed today from the National Alliance to End Homelessness and some other national organizations and communities in the US. So lots of unknowns. So quickly, just what is the COC program or Continuum of Care? It's a program through HUD whose purpose is to promote a community-wide commitment to the goal of ending homelessness. They provide funding for efforts of nonprofit providers, states, tribes, local governments to quickly rehouse people experiencing homelessness, persons experiencing trauma or a lack of safety, and those fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. Also including youth experiencing homelessness. Promoting access to and effective utilization of mainstream programs and programs funded with state or local resources, and optimizing self-sufficiency among people experiencing homelessness. So we, for years, have gotten continuum of care funding in our community. What is currently funded with these dollars includes permanent supportive housing. So that's serving our most vulnerable folks in the community, those with a disabling condition, and who have been experiencing homelessness for long periods of time. And that support is not time limited, so folks can remain in the program as long as they need it. We also fund rapid rehousing programs, which is a shorter term intervention, up to 24 months of assistance. There's joint transitional housing and rapid rehousing. We have our coordinated entry and our homeless management information system, which I sort of dub as like that sort of the infrastructure of the homeless services system is funded through these dollars. There's a box there with YHDP, so that's the Youth Homelessness Demonstration Program. A few years ago, our community applied for these special funds to address youth homelessness, and we were awarded those. The city has currently been the recipient for those dollars, and then they have sub-recipients in the community. Additionally, we fund some street outreach through Madison Street Medicine. And then the final amount on there, the planning grant, funds my position with the city and then also compensation for people with lived experience who serve on our board or on our lived experience council. HUD uses the notice of funding opportunity to let communities know what their goals and objectives and policy priorities are moving forward. So these are the ones that they've laid out in this NOFO. So ending the crisis of homelessness on our streets, HUD is very interested in moving towards funding street outreach rather than permanent housing, and also having COCs work with law enforcement. To enhance, I mean, they have advancing public safety, so that's part of that. HUD is prioritizing treatment and recovery. So they're really looking for programs that might have a behavioral health component, maybe some on-site services available, and moving away from the housing first model towards one of required participation and support services. Promoting self-sufficiency. That was one of the things I mentioned as being a goal of the COC program. The focus in this NOFO is more on increasing employment income. Traditionally, HUD has wanted us to work towards increasing any income for people, but this is strictly on employment. And they're also looking at when people exit our programs, that they're exiting to non-subsidized housing, which is a new thing. We haven't seen that before. Improving outcomes. Obviously, we all want to improve our outcomes, so that makes sense. And then minimizing trauma. HUD is looking for providers to be sure they're using trauma-informed care and instilling safety in their projects. All of these things go into greater detail in the Notice of Funding Opportunity, which is a 100-plus page document, which I can certainly send to you all if you want to read the details. Before I dig into some of the big changes, I want to note the timeline on this. I noted that it was released on November 13th with a due date of January 14th. We typically have 90 days to complete this funding competition, so this is moving it down to 60 days, including three major holidays, in addition to other holidays during that time. So that's a very tight turnaround. And then HUD does not plan to make funding announcements until May 2026. The issue with that is we're going to have some contracts that expire before then in our community, and they won't know if they're being funded. One of those is our largest permanent supportive housing program that Dane County applies for, and Housing Initiatives is the subrecipient. That contract, the current contract, ends March 31st of next year, and so there would be a gap in funds there. We are, I guess, lucky in that most of our housing programs end later in the calendar year of 2026, so would have some, hopefully, some time to know whether or not they're receiving funds. Additionally, HUD uses a web-based portal to submit applications. It's called eSnaps. The applications are not yet in eSnaps, and so we actually, at this point in time, the COC is not 100% sure of what HUD will be requiring of us in this application process. So, significant changes. We'll start with the increase in competition. HUD wants this to be these funds to be more competitive nationwide. So every year, I've been doing this for years now, HUD has required that we prioritize the projects that we want funded. Every community, every COC is doing this. You basically make a list. Top is the most important, and you go down. And then from there, they say, okay, a certain amount of your money is, well, let me back up. How do I want to explain it? Okay. Every year, we're told what our annual renewal demand is, or ARD, ARD. And that's the amount of money that would be required to fund all of your projects that are currently funded. So to do renewals, your ARD is, for instance, in our community, it's just over $6 million that we need to fund everything that's currently going on. And when we would prioritize our projects, HUD last year said, okay, 90% of your ARD is tier one. Like those are the top projects. You put them in tier one, that's 90% of your dollars. And those projects were considered sort of safe, for lack of a better word, in that those were pretty much guaranteed a renewal. But anything that fell that 10% ARD fell into tier two. Or any new projects we were applying for, those were more at risk because we had to compete nationally for those dollars. So we always knew like 90% of our funding we're pretty much going to get, and we're not too worried about it. It was more like lower performing projects or new stuff that would be more at risk. So this year, HUD has decided that that tier one, that sort of guaranteed renewal, is only 30% of our annual renewal demand. So it's about 1.8 million in our community. So out of that 6 million, we feel confident that we'll get 1.8 million. That's a big change for us to have so much uncertainty around funding, especially given that late timeline I mentioned. We may not know if projects are going to get funded. So that's a big change. Additionally, HUD is much more interested in investing in transitional housing and supportive services only projects. Typically, we use these funds to fund permanent housing in our community. And this year, HUD is saying that no more than 30% of our annual renewal demand can be used for permanent housing. I think I have a chart that shows the numbers more. So we'll get there, but we're going to have to cut a lot of permanent housing in our community that serves some of our most vulnerable members. And then finally, that youth funding that we got, that used to renew non-competitively. Sort of, it was just sort of like off to the side, and HUD would renew it, no problem. This year, they've decided that it has to be competitive. So, that is some additional funding that's more at risk than what it was in the past. So that tier one that I mentioned here, I did lay out some numbers on these. So last year in the competition, we had about 5.5 million that was considered tier one or that safe, and would likely be renewed. So this year it's down to that 1.8 million, a little bit more. So that's a significant change to have so much uncertainty around this funding. And then this one goes into that permanent housing. So right now, to renew the current permanent housing projects, That would be just over 4.6 million. But we are only going to be able to fund with that 30% cap 1.8 million. So HUD is requiring that our COC, just our COC, this isn't even including all the others in the country, we are going to have to cut over $2.8 million in permanent housing in our community. Currently, we have 257 households in COC funded permanent housing projects. This cut could result in loss of housing and services for approximately 157 households in our community. And like I mentioned, a lot of those are going to be permanent supportive housing projects, who are serving people with disabling conditions, elderly, those folks who have been homeless for the longest periods of time in our community. So additionally, HUD is going to require that some new certifications from projects that apply for funding. So any project that applies must certify affirmatively to the following: the project applicant will not engage in racial preferences or other forms of illegal discrimination, and the project applicant will not operate drug injection sites or safe consumption sites, knowingly distribute drug paraphernalia on or off of property under their control, permit the use or distribution of illicit drugs on property under their control, or conduct any of these activities under the pretext of harm reduction. HUD does not define harm reduction anywhere, so it's unclear exactly what they're looking for or not looking for. I don't know. So this is new that agencies will have to affirm to this after years of having HUD wanting us to do harm reduction work. I mean, that's what we've been doing. That makes sense. So again, significant change. So new projects. There are new project types that can be applied for with these funds. For us, the COC is not going to accept applications for new permanent housing projects. Like I mentioned, there's that 30% cap. We're going to have to cut all kinds of currently funded projects. I don't think it makes sense to bring new projects in when we're going to be displacing people because they'll fall under that 30% cap also. HUD's priority, like I mentioned, is transitional housing and support services only. So, they're looking for us to, move from permanent housing to these other project types. And then there's all kinds of threshold requirements that HUD has on these project types. For instance, transitional housing, I'm not going to go through all of the details, but there's service requirements. So, if an agency operates a transitional housing program, they have to provide 40 hours of services per week per participant. So essentially, a full-time job of services for each individual in the project that can be lessened for people who are employed. And it is not a requirement for folks who are age 62 or older, and those who have a physical or developmental disability, not including substance use. I want to note they don't mention mental health conditions as a reason to not have to meet this requirement. So that right there is a lot if you're going to operate a transitional housing program. Additionally, there's the emphasis on the employment income. First street outreach programs and the COC in general, HUD is looking for us to cooperate, assist, and not interfere or impede with law enforcement to enforce local laws such as public camping and public drug use laws. So peppered throughout the document, there is reference to working with law enforcement. For the COC, we're required to have a board of directors, and HUD in the past has never given points for seats on the board beyond those with lived experience of homelessness, but now they've put in We can get additional points if we have, I think it's two law enforcement officers on the board. So there's some new criteria around that that we'll have to work towards. So for that tier two funding, so the funding that's not, we're competing across the nation with other COCs. What we do is we have a big application that we complete that goes through our efforts as a community on preventing and ending homelessness. And this year, HUD is calling that our COC merit review. And I'm calling this slide the points of interest, but really it's things that are new from HUD and that, I guess, while not unexpected, we're not prepared for these changes at this time. So I worry that our COC will not score well. And I don't think most COCs across the country are going to score well because nobody was prepared for these sorts of changes. So again, the emphasis on employment income, instead of just income in general. Linda, I see someone's hand. Should I take questions or do I keep going?
I think we can, that's okay. Supervisor Berusha, did you have a
Yeah, thank you, and apologies for the interruption. And this may sound, I guess, may sound parochial, but were these changes in the HUD criteria done by administrative rule, or how? Because I'm kind of curious how, by what process we got these changes, and if it's too complicated of an answer for right now, I'll wait till a more appropriate time.
So I guess the short answer is a lot of what's in this funding opportunity conflicts with regulation.
Okay, well, thank you for your answer.
I think Alder Matthews, did you have a question?
For the slide that we're on right now, I'm just wanting to clarify if exits to non-subsidized housing means like even WIDA, like income restricted housing, not even that would, would that count as subsidized in this case? Or do they mean,
You know, I'm not. Oh, sorry.
or if they mean like subsidized, like public housing or some of the other things we have now.
You know, I'm not certain. And that's the thing is HUD has introduced a lot of new criteria, but haven't provided guidance as to what exactly that means, like the details of it. So the short answer is I don't know. But
Thank you.
I mean, that's it makes a difference, right? Like, yeah. Yeah, so with the merit review, HUD will be looking at the increase in employment income. They're looking at programs to require support service participation and actually asking for us to submit program contracts, leases, occupancy agreements, anything that will show that there is that requirement there. Again, they haven't given us guidance on what they're looking for. As sort of a support service requirement, is that case management once a month? Is that sufficient or is it more in depth? We don't know. Exits to non-subsidized housing. They're looking for us to reduce encampments. I don't know exactly how they're going to show that. They've never asked us to report on the number of encampments in the community. So we'll see how that goes. And then looking, as I mentioned before, street outreach, partnering with first responders and law enforcement to increase housing and service engagement. And then some more the emphasis on the public safety. So they're looking for us to cite laws that indicate that public illicit drug use is not allowed, that public camping and loitering are not allowed. They're asking us to show which entities are responsible for enforcing those laws. demonstrating utilization of standards that address individuals experiencing homelessness who are a danger to themselves or others, including involuntary commitment, substantial implementation of SORNA, which is the Sex Offender Registry and Notification Act. So that's something that states do. The state of Wisconsin has not substantially implemented that, so we won't be able to get those plans and or get those points. And it's one of those things the COC has no say in that. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Tori, I do see a question.
Yeah.
Heather Sims and then Supervisor Doolin.
Thank you. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding how you're reading this, Tori. So you're saying that if we demonstrate that these are laws that we have created or have on the books, that the continuum of care will get more money?
We'll get more points, which then could result in more funding. Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's asinine. I'm sorry. Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Supervisor Dillon?
And what was, just to go back to the law enforcement engagement, are we talking about law enforcement and first responder engagement with homeless people or with landlords and housing providers, and like how would that work? I mean, what does that even look like? Like, how does that make things better,
Well,
supposedly?
I'm not sure I can answer that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, but this next bullet point is an example of how they want us to work with law enforcement. So when asked by law enforcement, the COC assists in adequately mapping and checking the location of homeless sex offenders. That's HUD's language. That's not how I would say it, but that is not something we engage in. I mean, we just don't do this. And then the COC cooperates, assists, and does not interfere or impede with law enforcement or co-response to connect violators of public camping or drug use laws with services. So those are some things that we haven't traditionally done. Not that we don't cooperate with law enforcement or things like that, but this is just a different way of looking at it. And then HUD has some priority points that they'll give to communities. If activities are located within a HUD-defined opportunity zone, we can get some additional points. And then if all of the COC projects that are nonprofit charitable organizations voluntarily, thoroughly, and demonstrably facilitate immigration status verification before distribution of benefits to all recipients, we can get some additional priority points for that. We don't do that. That's not been something we've done. So that was a lot of heavy news in a short period of time. I am happy to take questions. I sort of did a broad brush of the big changes, but there are a lot more in the details.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tori. So I see Heather Sims and then Lieutenant Allen.
Thank you. So I guess I have a question regarding the harm reduction and kind of the verbiage used there. Do you believe that that could also include like Narcan stations, fentanyl testing, the things that we've put into place to try to ensure that those who may be overdosing are safer? Is that accurate?
I mean, without a definition from HUD, it's hard to say, but I would assume that yes, any of that would be considered harm reduction.
Okay, and then just something that hopefully gives you at least a little bit of hope. I attended the National Lived Experience Leadership Conference this recently, and from everything I understood from all the, communication between different groups, Madison and Dane County is light years ahead of many, many, many places when it comes down to the solutions that we are working towards, the things that we've already put into place. It just blew me away how much better we're doing than so many other areas. So good job.
Yeah, thanks.
Lieutenant Allen and then Alder Mayor.
Yeah, I just had a question. Could you just give the acronym again for that sex offender program, SORNS? Could you just.
It's SORNA, SORNA.
Okay.
Sex Offender Registry and Notification Act.
Okay. And
So there's, if you
what
Google
are
it,
those?
so
I'm
they're
sorry.
looking for states that have substantially implemented it. And I want to say it's DOJ, I'm guessing. Their website lists which states have substantially implemented it, and Wisconsin isn't one of them.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I know that we do as a police department, we do a lot of notifications when sex offenders are moving into certain communities. But I'm not familiar with all the points of this particular program, so I just wanted to get that correct acronym so I'm in the right place. Thanks.
Thank you. Alder Mayor and then Kathy Kemp.
Thank you, Chair. Tori, you mentioned that HUD is prioritizing street outreach and transitory housing over permanent housing. Are you able to speak to why that might be and if that is a change?
Yeah, that's a huge change. I'm not sure if I can adequately speak to why. It's very interesting to me that we would, I guess, create homelessness in our community by defunding permanent housing programs. Yeah, I can see where we would want to emphasize street outreach. Communities across the country are seeing an increase in unsheltered homelessness. Absolutely. If we don't have housing opportunities to connect people to, what is the point? So if we're eliminating our housing opportunities, I'm not sure what street outreach is going to do. Transitional housing can serve people for up to 24 months, and then they're expected to go out and be able to afford rent on their own. I'm just not sure for some of our population, older adults, folks with disabling conditions who aren't able to work, how are they going to afford rent in communities across this country? I'm not quite sure what the thought is.
And I'm of course not asking you to defend this. I'm just trying to figure out
No.
what that, I mean, there must be some intention and I just want to know what it is or it's chaos. But either way, I really appreciate how you've laid all this out. It's been very informative. Thank you.
Kathy Kemp.
You partly answered one of my questions, and that was, are they defining transitional housing in sort of the old way of 24 months and you sign a program agreement? So there is that time limitation. They have defined that. Okay. And then if 30% of the funds can be used for permanent supportive housing, does that mean that as a continuum, you have to go out and find programs that comply with these things for that additional 70%? So, I mean, new programs that are transitional housing, I mean, that's the goal for submitting the application.
Yeah, so applicants will have to agree to do those new things. Yeah.
Okay. And then in one of the slides, you said 40 hours per participant per week.
Yes.
So that's like one staff person for every person who's in a transitional housing program. How is
Yeah, I
that
mean,
even possible?
it could be workshops. You could have people sit in budgeting workshops for an hour a day. I don't know that it's the best way to serve people.
Well, I mean, I just
But
can't imagine people being able to be available for, 40 hours.
who would
So,
want to? Nobody wants to do 40 hours of services a week. That's wild.
no. Okay. All right. Thank you. And thanks for, laying. I understand this all better now. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Thanks, Tori. Yeah, I mean, that 40 hours of programming is going to make it pretty hard to find employment. If we're
Yeah,
emphasizing
exactly.
employment for, employment income, so it makes no sense. But as Alder Mayer said, maybe that's the point. Supervisor Doolin?
Yeah, so is there a stated logic? Like, did they give support for each of these? Like, is there, I don't know how to even, what would be the, is there a place I can find what their supposed logic behind each of these rules would be, as opposed to
So,
underlying agendas being what they are?
I would say inaccurate information. So, one of the things they touted is that mental illness causes homelessness, and they referenced a study in the NOFO. The authors of that study have since had to place a disclaimer on their website, letting folks know that the study doesn't actually show that mental illness causes homelessness. Like, they had to re-explain, we understand the federal government's using our study to, push certain ideas. That's not what this study showed. Here's what the study actually shows. So I have not seen any information that's factual based, I guess, to back it up.
Gotcha, thanks.
Sure. And I don't know, in terms of those 40, I come back to those 40 hours of service. And I'm guessing you don't know because they haven't actually put out the actual application at this point. But with those 40 hours, obviously some of it can be group, can be workshops, educational stuff, but can it also be provided by other entities that aren't funded? But so for example, if someone's enrolled in, a job training program, is that 40 hours? Is that their 40 hours? I mean, I think, and that might not be
I'm saying
provided by the
yes.
housing provider.
Yeah, I think so, because one of the things that they are looking at is that programs, I'm not sure if I'll get the wording right, but they supplement their programming with other resources from state and local governments, Medicaid. They list all of these things. So one of the things I thought is if someone's enrolled in FSET, Food Stamp Employment and Training, and that requires 20 hours a week or whatever the requirement will be, I would argue that those 20 hours would count for the 40 hours, So I think you could, it wouldn't necessarily have to be like that agency providing all of the work, but trying to be creative.
Yes, Supervisor Rylander.
Well, so, and I'm sorry, this is not my real voice. What do we, how do we proceed? Like, is securing HUD funding more important than our values? I guess that's a rhetorical question, but it seems like we need to diminish the efficacy of our programs in order to have the money we need to implement our programs. It's a very broad question, but here's your opportunity to answer it.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, it's always been like, where do you draw the line? Where's the line in the sand where you say we're not going to do that? And funding to support people is also needed in the community. And so how do you balance those out? I'm hopeful that the lawsuits that are being filed may make a difference. There's also an opportunity for Congress to act on this. So, actually, last year's funding competition was supposed to cover 2 years. We were supposed to be automatically renewed for fiscal year 2025 funding, automatically, provided we're following all the rules and all of that good stuff. HUD decided to go against what Congress had voted on last year. But my understanding is Congress is looking at their transportation and HUD bill, T-HUD bill, this week maybe, and they could put in there that they have to follow the past, which would give us a year to prepare. That doesn't answer your question, but yeah, it's a very, it's hard.
I was under no illusion that there was an answer. Thank you.
So worth perhaps contacting members of Congress to encourage them to do that, certainly. And I thought I saw Heather Sims, I thought I saw your hand up.
That was just my question, is would it be worth it to contact our Congress members to voice and encourage others to do the same? So.
So I have a question, not, I mean, it's related to this, and I guess in a sense, and I guess maybe both for city and county. To what extent, because housing certainly impacts workforce and quality of life in a community, so to what extent is our various chambers of commerce and our corporate entities within Dane County and the city of Madison, to what point are they? Are they engaging with city and county trying to address some of these issues? I'm just curious if there's been much conversation, if we're seeing much support, or outrage, maybe is the better word to say, from the business community with some of these proposals. And then I'll Tori, or Christina, I'll let you answer, and then we have Supervisor Baruchak and Supervisor Doolin.
I have not heard of any businesses or corporations. This snowfall just recently came out. I know the news of the lawsuits right before the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm not sure that the community at large understands the huge impact that this would have. The HUD funding is complex. It is one of our biggest, if not the biggest funder, in our community. I just don't think that there's a understanding and awareness of that, and that, or the population that it actually serves and houses people every year. If you're not in it, you don't know it. So I myself have not heard of anybody stepping up or asking more questions. You can go ahead,
And
Tori or Sarah.
this won't directly answer your question at all, Linda, but this will impact property owners in our community. I'm not going to remember the exact amount off the top of my head, but I had a report run that talked about how much rent comes from the COC program. And it was like, I mean, in the millions, right, that come to property owners in Dane County. I could pull that number for sure, but that's going to be a big impact of like guaranteed rent that you knew was coming won't be there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I thank you. I appreciate that because it does, I think, address a little bit what I was trying to get at, which is the economic impact to businesses of all sorts in Dane County with this hit. Yeah, I think Supervisor Doolin, you did have your hand up. Okay, then Lieutenant Allen, and then Supervisor or Supervisor Baruchak, and then Lieutenant Allen.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I have a lot of businesses in my district, and I'd say that the issues surrounding so I'll definitely talk to them to the extent to which they know about this or have ideas for how to for what to do. I unfortunately report that my answer is the same as others. It's nothing at this time that I've heard of. But let me be a little less polite. I think we've been very cautious this whole conversation, but the presentation was excellent. But these facts that are being reported, this is a load of BS, and I can go on a soapbox about my complaints with the federal government, but I'll just highlight that the closing comment was that HUD is doing something that Congress said not to do. Well, that sounds unconstitutional to me, and I just wanted to put that out there. Thanks for the excellent presentation.
Thank you. Yes, Lieutenant Allen.
I just wanted to mention it seems like the Porch Light has kind of attempted this new strategy of having a nonprofit or a foundation now try to fund the staffing costs for the new emergency shelter on Bardolon. So that might be something to watch to see how much support they can get from the business community and kind of the private sector to kind of help support that effort. Might be a similar group or strategy, if you wanted to take a look at what kind of demand they get. I'm guessing that's because of their fatigue with trying to get through these systems and trying to rely on, these different contracts that come around over and over. I think that they've kind of shifted strategies to this other one, and it might be worth a conversation with their CEO about that.
Thank you. Yes, Supervisor Doolin.
Yeah, I think in the interest of being a slightly little less polite, I mean, one of the things we need to find a way to do is raise our voices in the private sector contributors to the economic crisis through underemployment and slave wages. I'm sorry, but when you have Walmart teaching people like new hires how to apply for, government services, instead of paying people enough to live inside and eat food and wear clothes, then that's a problem. So I don't know if there's a way to like elevate voices like that to start holding like, place or people that and entities that, have plenty enough money to pay their employees based on their profit margins and don't do so. I mean, for example, CUNA has a food pantry for their employees in their business. What the heck is that? That tells you something about how much they're paying their not paying their employees. So I think that there needs to be more pressure on that. And I don't know how to make those my voice louder for that, but I'm all in.
Yeah, thank you, Supervisor Dillon. I think it, I mean, it all intersects, right? Because if you, we haven't raised the federal minimum wage hasn't raised, the state minimum wage hasn't been increased in God knows, I can't remember how many years. And there should be some, And I know it goes beyond what local municipalities can are able to do, but I think you're right in terms of continuing to point these things out that we have corporations in the county that are a drain on the resources and the safety net services when the solution, at least for their employees, would be to pay a living wage with benefits. Heather Sims.
I guess I can feel similarly in saying that, the cuts from, the presidential standpoint all the way down, trickling through the county and trickling through the city as well, directly impacting our nonprofit sector and creating situations where, we don't get raises for mileage. 3 cents, and we can't get that. So, I mean, there's just a real big gap, and it hits home very hard, as a person who's impacted tremendously by this currently.
I think the economic ripples of this are huge, to the business community, to the nonprofit sector, both in terms of services we're able to provide, but also staffing. And then you add to that additional cuts that get put in place in local budgets, and it's just an additional one more. It's death by a thousand little cuts. Although this one's not a little cut. So any other, Troy, really, thank you very much for the presentation and for your work. For the city and county staff who are working in this, I really appreciate it. Are there any other questions for Tori? Tori, any last words? What, how else can we be helpful? We can certainly call members of Congress. We can do that. We can pay attention to elections that are coming up next year in terms of, say, for example, an attorney general who's filing lawsuits on behalf of, the folks we work with, that kind of thing. What else can we be doing?
I think, in the so in the grand scheme of the whole country, the COC program is like really tiny, right? It's very nuanced. People don't know about it. And I have found talking about it and letting folks know what the impact will be is huge. Just educating, like I joke that my when I go to get my hair cut, she's probably like, "Oh boy, here comes Tori again." Because I tell her, like, "Here's what's happening. You need to know what's going to happen in our community." And that's I feel like all like the COC coordinators across the state, we joke about how that's what we do now. We go around, we talk to people, and just tell them like, "Here's what's going to happen in your community." And I think that's important for folks to know that because if you aren't paying, if you aren't impacted by the work in some way, either by doing it or receiving services, you might not know what's happening, you know?
So continuing to advocate, and which can take a lot of different, I mean, everyone that I, every person on here that I see could write a letter to the editor, could as a way of getting information out to public who don't, because you're right, if you don't, if you're not working in this area, if you don't see it, it's a complex system. It doesn't register what's going on or how that's going to ripple out. So yeah, continuing to advocate in any way we can. And then I would ask if will we can we can you send out can we get a copy of your slides? Thank you. So we can use
Yeah,
perhaps
definitely.
some of that information as we write letters and talk with people. We have that background in terms of how that is. And if you would be able to find that number in terms of what that estimated economic
So the
impact would be
rents,
to
yeah.
landlords, that would be I think could be helpful. Yeah, Kathy.
I just have a quick question about, like the city and county committees that are like HHS. And are they getting this presentation so they also are aware of what's happening? So eventually the city council and county supervisors will understand.
I haven't been asked to take the show on the road yet, but I
I mean,
certainly
I feel
will.
like, one thing our committee can do is, at least inform them of what the implications are of this at the county and city level. Based on, what Tori has said. And I feel like it has to be raised to a higher level, to because for them to realize that we're either going to have to replace this money for housing or 157 people are going to lose their housing. Was that the right number, Tori? 157?
I think so, yeah.
And I mean, that's way bigger magnitude than Dairy Drive was, and it will have a huge implication. So I guess I think that it might be a responsibility that we have to let the city and county committees know about this.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good point. Sarah, Lim?
I did find that email, Tori, from Adam. The rent amount was about
Oh.
4.48 million a year, the landlords are receiving as rent. But we'll send that out when I send out Tori's presentation slide also.
There is that 4.48 million. Is that just Dane County?
Just Dane County, yeah.
Thank you. So a loss of almost 4.5 million to landlords and 157 additional families unhoused on top of that. So thank
Yeah.
you. Okay, any other questions for Tori at this point? I think, yeah, I do, Supervisor Rylander. I do appreciate your comment about at what point do we say we either are who we say we are or we aren't. And I think those are going to be decisions we'll have to make, I think, to some degree, in terms of these merit points. And so how do we try to gather local resources and local supports to make up that funding if we have to? So yeah, it's all, I was doing a little math. I mean, and just, 150 for that, the money that is being diverted out of permanent housing. I mean, that basically, if people end up in the criminal legal system as a result of some of that, we're going to pay $38,000 a year to incarcerate people. So, that money won't even incarcerate half the number of the 157. So there's that ripple effect also. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for your work. And yeah, I will encourage the alders and supervisors on the committee to bring this back to the other committees you sit on and maybe incorporate in quickly into your work plans and presentations for your committees. So thanks, Troy. Appreciate it. Our next item is an action item, and it is our 2026 work plan draft. And I think, Christina, that's you, right?
It is, but Sarah can jump in, and my colleague Patrick as well, who will introduce themselves in a little bit. So what we did is we just put together like a skeleton outline of what the work plan for this committee can be next year. You, of course, the members can make the ultimate decision about what you would like that to look like. In drafting the plan, we put, common things that we usually do throughout the year, and I kind of go through those. And then we also put in the dates of the meetings on the plan, not to conflict with different holidays or religious observations. So I'll go ahead and share that, and then I can kind of go through it, and then it can be a discussion whether you want to scratch something or add something, like I said. So this is kind of what we came up with when we were looking at it. We thought that the first meeting in January, we'd probably want an update on what Tori just presented. So maybe since that application is due to the federal government by the 14th of January, I thought that would be a good time to kind of see where we landed a month from now. We have been wanting to have the CDA, the housing authorities, both the city and the county, talk about their housing programs and admissions policies. We've been trying to get them to come to this committee for a couple of years now. I know that there's a new director of the CDA, so we're kind of doing a placeholder for that again. We thought in March, talking about the new men's shelter update, talking about it opening up. We usually do a community plan to prevent and homeless update at that time too. We'll then be, I think, into like year three of the community plan. Again, that's the plan that the Homeless Services Consortium put together. April, talking about an update maybe from the regional housing strategy. In May, maybe a doubled up service update and some homeless services system performance data. That we usually bring to this committee for information purposes. And then we get into already thinking about the 2027 budget. So doing some talking amongst members about and doing some listening sessions, and then doing a recommendation around August. So they were kind of ahead of the game a little bit on that. Maybe another men's shelter update, because They'll be opening the new shelter. We're going to want to know how that's going. September, we will need to do like a doodle possibly to get a date because there's just so many dates that do not work on Mondays unless the group decides that maybe that's a cancellation, the chairs decide. That is when maybe the point in time data, annual data and doubled up population estimates would be done. And again, another city county budget recommendation date set aside. Talking about homeless awareness, that's usually done in November. So we put that maybe talk a little bit more about it in October and some street outreach updates. And we usually at the end of the year, like we had last time, last month, no, it was October, City and County Affordable Housing Fund updates. And then working in the work plan. And then this was just other potential topics, you know, that have been thrown around in prior years up or have had presentations on talking about lived experience council, talking about incarcerated youth and homelessness, immigration and homelessness, overflow shelter is a topic. We had Mike Bassford come this year and give us an update on like the state budget from the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness. Maybe the area agency on aging plan. Sorry, AAA is usually how I say it. Give an update on what they've done since they implemented their plan at the beginning of this year. And then, if there's anything outside the city of Madison, just for Dane County, like do you want Sun Prairie Housing Coalition start or any Fitchburg groups to come on in to talk about county issues? So that's kind of the skeleton, like I said, of what we've come up with. As we go throughout the year, this is constantly ever changing depending on what issues come up during the year. Or sometimes we're not able to get presentations for the month that we set it aside for, or their report might not be ready. So there's just a lot of factors that it does get revised throughout the year. But we wanted to start with something to start the conversation and see if there was anything else that you wanted to make sure was on there. And then we could add it on. Any other thoughts, Sarah?
Are there any additional ideas? I know I was thinking as was having an update on the notice of funding opportunities in January, if that moves forward and we submit something. And as I recall, Tori from Tori's presentation, that May would be when we would learn if things are funded, would we want to kind of have a placeholder for the May meeting, April or May meeting, for an update on that in terms of what we're receiving or not receiving for Dane County?
Yeah, I think Tori, you had estimated, or maybe she left, estimated around May. It's so hard to say. It could be a May, it could be June.
Okay.
But yeah, I can put that on here as a placeholder for sure.
Yeah, Sarah.
Oh, just want to mention the January, if you're wondering, like it's before the application submission, what can we update? The local competition, HUD requires that we finish our local competition 1 month prior to their due date. So we have to get the applications from the agencies by December 14th. So 2 months is short, but we actually have 1 month to really plan for at the agency level. So by that time, we believe that we would know like who are in that top 30% for permanent housing. What does that mean? Like how many people may be displaced? We would have a better idea at that point because our local competition would have almost wrapped up by then.
That's helpful to know. Thank you. I mean, I know looking at the list too, I think I would certainly be interested. I mean, I know we're seeing an increase in elderly experiencing homelessness. I know we're seeing an increase in the number of elderly people being released from prison without housing. Thinking about some of these things in the NOFO that would not get us extra points in terms of how we treat folks coming out of prison with certain offenses. And then immigration, and we know what's happening with that. So I'd be interested in having a presentation of some sort, even if it was just looking at kind of whatever data we have or hearing from organizations, kind of looking at special populations and what we're seeing in homelessness. For youth with criminal legal system impact, or legal system impact in immigration, based on immigration status. I don't know where we slide those in, but I know they were listed as other topics. If we could do some outreach and find out when folks might be available to talk. So Newbridge, ADRC, I think, looking at homelessness among folks with disabilities, including physical disabilities, are we seeing an increase there? Yeah, so I think, especially as all of this is kind of being unraveled and picked apart, I would like to, I'd really like us to be paying attention to the special populations in terms of how this is falling for folks. I mean, I just, yeah. Heather.
You mentioned Newbridge. I would be able to make a presentation if I knew exactly what time frame we're looking at to be able to gather the data. So.
Thank you. And I wonder too, I don't think we've ever had someone from the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, Division of Adult Institutions, or Division of Community Corrections present to us. But I would be interested in knowing whether they're how on top of their data they are in terms of the number of people they're working with who are being released from incarceration, and the same for the jail, Dane County Jail. How many people are being released from incarceration into homelessness? I would love if, especially with the jail population, I would love it if we could track how many people are we incarcerating who had a job when we incarcerated them, who are coming out without their job, and how many people went in with housing and are coming out without housing. Because when you lose your job when you're incarcerated, you tend to lose your housing while you're in there too. So I don't know that that data is tracked, but I would certainly be interested, at least maybe looking at national trends if we don't have the data locally, and looking at the impacts and local criminal justice policy in terms of incarceration rates in the jail and services being provided in the jail. But DOC as well, since they obviously incarcerate, 22 to 25,000 people a year. Any other thoughts from committee members? Yeah, Alder Mayor.
I'll just say that I like the list. I think it's a good range of topics, so I support that.
So we can add those to additional topics and kind of see where we can fit those in throughout the year. And then, because this is an action item, I think what we're looking for this evening would be a motion to approve the work plan with the additional time. Yeah, Supervisor Doolin, before I go on.
Yeah, I'll make a motion
Okay, to
to
accept the
approve
work
with the
plan.
additional products.
Okay. There's a couple of seconds, 3 seconds. Okay. So we're good on seconds, thirds, and fourths. So the motion is to accept the work plan with the additional topics added in as we can fit those, and get those scheduled. All those in favor of, oh, is there any further discussion? Let me ask that. Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the motion to approve, please signify by raising your hand or saying aye. Okay. Any opposed? I actually think we have a, I think we that was unanimous. Any, yeah, I think we had a unanimous vote on that. Everyone's jumping around on my screen, so I'm trying to track that. But any objection? I'm going to ask just to be safe. Any objection? All those opposed to the motion, nay. Please signify by raising your hand. Supervisor Baruchuk, your hand's up. I wasn't sure if it was okay.
Sorry, I voted aye. My hand was still up.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I thought you did, but I wanted to make sure. Okay. Any
Thanks for checking.
abstention? Yeah. Any abstentions? Okay. The motion passes. So we've approved the work plan for 2026, and we'll keep checking in, Christina and Sarah, with you in terms of adding those additional discussion items. Thank you. For putting that together for us. And with that, we can move on to agenda item number three, or excuse me, agenda item number four, our staff reports.
I'll start off. I usually share the shelter utilization data with you. So last night, Porchlight Men Shelter served 330 guests. As you have heard in the past, there is a concern because the new men's shelter that's being developed is the capacity is 250. And the November average is 335 guests. So that is a big concern that we're wrestling with. There were some overflow shelter funds got approved at the county, which would not be enough to, it would just be covering a few months of, out of the year. So that discussion and planning is currently happening. Salvation Army Woman Shelter had 96 individuals. And then Family Shelter had 19 families, so they had to like do some work in their rooms because of some issues that they had. So they're filling in. People are moving in and out now. But in addition, there were eight families in the severe weather hotel program over the holiday weekend. They had 30 families on the wait list. Many of them are doubled up, but 10 of the 30 families who were on the wait list reported that they were experiencing unsheltered homelessness, meaning mostly in their cars. So those are the families that Salvation Army reached out to consider for hotel placement when there are cold weather nights. Healing House had one family. I think that's the information that I have tonight.
On the nothing from the YWCA or
Yeah, I didn't get it in time.
I understand. No, thank you. Any questions for Sarah on the shelter numbers? And I know looking at overflow shelter options for moving forward once the new men's shelter, the new purpose-built shelter opens. So yeah, we'll look for, and that's on our work plan for 2026. So we'll keep updated on that. Okay. Christina?
Before I share my screen, Patrick, you wanted to introduce yourself. Go ahead.
Good. Hello, everyone. I'm Patrick Duffy. I work at the county now. I've been here for a week, a month and a half, and I work alongside Christina and Janisha. So I'll be cycling through staffing this meeting for on the county's end. And I in the Housing Access and Affordability Division, I'm managing the county's contracts with the men's shelter, the Beacon, and with Salus House. So that's what some of the rest of my work with the county. But it's nice to be here, and thank you for your work.
Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome.
So yeah, you'll see his face and his name. Just wanted to have a chance to introduce himself. Not too many updates from the county. I did get about this time of year, we do get the eviction report data, and we have the 2024 data that I received. So I was just going to just share, the budget's final and the contracts have been adjusted for that 1% cut to POS agency partners. We talked a little bit about increasing the men's shelter funding for that and the outreach service that Sarah mentioned. Also, the partnership with TRC, with some primary partnership for TRC services, and then the overflow shelter hotel vouchers for Hanau's families. And then there's more capital improvements to the Affordable Housing Development Fund. And then $2 million was to purchase for lawful sleeping options for unhoused persons as well. So, except for capital amendments and the new funding, the contracts for renewals have been sent to agencies for signature. So, getting to the eviction reports, I do have historical data here from prior years. One thing to notice is there were many, many more filings in 2024, but you can see the amount of evictions granted actually was less. I think this is for because we had the eviction diversion and defense program still running, so that could have been a factor in the number of evictions. Also, the eviction moratorium, now over things like that. So that's quite a bit that was filed, but in order to receive the eviction diversion and defense services, you had to be filed on in court. So it could, that could be why there were so many. Many were for non-payment. Very, very few were for other lease violations. If we go to the next one, then you can see the service providers rental eviction. So this was, the Affordable Housing Development Fund in home. Sorry, I should have said that first. And then here is the service providers. So nonprofit rental eviction reporting. Again, filings are up. There were more evictions granted, but many, again, non-payment rent over anything else. That is all I have. And that report will go out with minutes. So you make sure, you will have that information.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Christina? No. Seeing none. And I think our next item on the agenda would be a motion for adjournment. We'll reconvene after holidays. Yeah, Heather Sims, this motion to adjourn, or did
Yes.
I just like to clarify. So,
Yes, motion to adjourn.
all right, thank you. Is there a second? Okay, Supervisor Doolin. Any objection to recording unanimous support of the motion to adjourn? If so, raise your hand. Seeing none, motion is approved unanimously. We are adjourned until our January 6th meeting. So just encourage everyone to do what you can in terms of getting the word out in advocacy, and hope you all have some time to rest and spend time with people you love, and come back ready to fight some more in January. So
All right. Have a good
adjourned.
night, everyone. Thanks,
Yes, thank
Chair.
you.
Happy
You too.
holidays, everybody.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.
Thank you.